Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode number 78 for January 29th, 2024. Outlook vulnerability leaks NTLM passwords. NSA now just buys your data. No-name ransomware attacks multiple targets. And Trello data breach exposes 15 million users. Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Jim Guckin, your absent-minded host, with another week's worth of cybersecurity news stories that I think you need to pay attention to from the last week. Now, I will say some of these are really like interesting stories and things that I just didn't think about being vulnerabilities, and some of them just are horrifying pieces of privacy stuff that the U.S. government, and I'm sure any other governments do, that is just downright terrifying. So without further ado, let's get to our first story, which is we all mostly use Outlook for business. I mean, there's some organizations out there that may use something else, but the majority of people out there use Outlook for business mail, personal mail, however you want to look at it. It is a very popular mail receiving platform. So there was a CVE that just kind of made its rounds into being something that is scary. So the CVE is CVE 2023-35636. And it has a CVSS score of 6.5. Not the world-ending stuff we've talked about in the past. Not a 9, not a 10, not like things you really need to worry about. Right kind of in the middle. And what this does is it allows people who are clever enough access to your NTLAN manager hash passwords, the NTLM. That's in case you didn't know what NTLM is. Because honestly, it's one of those facts that I've learned at one point and then I just totally forgot about. And this vulnerability was discovered by Varonis, a security researcher working there named, and I apologize for the name butchering, Dolev Taller. He found the vulnerability, and it's actually not part of the mail functionality. It's actually part of the calendar sharing functionality in Outlook. And it's very kind of simple because it's easily created by just inserting two header files into an email. And for those of you who are not aware, header files are kind of the background information that kind of tells email where to go, who sent it, is it clear, stuff like that. So these, it's kind of the hidden data that tells you all you need to know about that email. And these two header files, content class and X sharing config URL, if they are added and if they are crafted by, you know, a malicious actor out there, they can have special values put in them in order to get the NTLM hash from your computer, the password file hashed from your computer, sent to, you know, the third-party evil people. The NTLM attack really works by leveraging a couple different things, Windows Performance Analyzer and Windows File Explorer. And what happens there is the Windows Performance Analyzer attempts to make an authentication using that encrypted, or I shouldn't say encrypted, hashed version of your password, NTLM version 2, which in any normal network is only something that's done from internal IP to internal IP. It's always local to your network. But for this vulnerability, it for some reason sends that file, you know, out to the open web. And from there, they can capture this file and then kind of throw computation powers to it and brute force and break that password offline. Or they can just kind of take that hashed version of the password and send it back to Microsoft, pretending to be you, and then get in there. Now, the good story about this is why there are people now who are trying to utilize this. This has already been patched if you keep up to date with your patches. So this was patched back in December of 2023. So last month's Patch Tuesday. So if you haven't done already, run your December patches. At this point, I'm hoping you have run December's and January's, but this was in the December's package. So that would have put us back into, let me look at the calendar here. So December 12th, the second Tuesday of the month, would have been when this patch came out. Now, this, why it's part of the calendar sharing, you want to say the way it's mostly going to come in is by phishing. But there have been other people who've done this another way, so it's not just phishing, it's IM phishing kind of stuff. Because all you have to do is open a specially crafted file, and it gets access to that data. And then in its craftiness, it says, hey, talk out to this server, send your authentication token, and everything will be fine. So it's not the most sophisticated one. There's a slightly higher barrier to entry than, like, you don't need no skills. You need a little bit of skills to be able to pull this off. But because of how easy it is, and you just have to open the file, and you may not even realize anything is different. And it's such a, you know, popular client out there. I highly recommend that you take your time and make sure that that is patched in your environment to fully, just to make sure no one gets any ideas for your environment. So for our second story this week, this is one that I've known about, but it just kind of hit some of the news feeds, mostly because a U.S. senator had made a bigger deal out of this, which is why it was a news story. But I want to make sure, because not a lot of people are aware of what's actually going on. So we've talked about on the show that everything you do online leaves fingerprints everywhere. This is their metadata. This is how they track you. The cookies, all of this is identification across the internet about you. And advertisers can put this together with quite creepy accuracy and know a lot about you. And if they want to go further, they can know everything about you. They can tie it to your name. They can tie it to your computer. They can do all this other stuff with it. So that in itself is scary. There was a, I want to say last year, there was a John Oliver Last Week Tonight thing where they targeted the senators and Congress people and was able to target certain things in those areas, knowing like where they worked, what their connection was, stuff like that. And that's the kind of thing advertisers have. Like, they can know if you had walked within, you know, half a mile of their store. Just by the metadata your phone is sending out and saying, hey, here's where I'm at, here's the IP address I'm on, all this stuff is stuff that they use to target you. Now, that in itself is utterly terrifying. But one step from that is the government of the United States of America is also using that data. And your first instinct is, well, they can't get it without a warrant. They can't go to your internet service provider. They can't go to your telecom provider and say, give me all the information on Jim Guckin without a warrant. They need that warrant to be able to get that information. But buying publicly available data, that's a loophole. So, and you want to believe they have the data to back it up to be able to tie everything together. So they buy this data from data brokers. And that is something scary because it gives them an idea of everything about your life. You know, they know if you're a smoker or not. They know if you, what kind of beer you drink. They know your political affiliation. They know your sexual orientation. How many people are in your family? What those people's names are. All this is in metadata. And they are buying this. And that puts a serious privacy concern, regardless of who holds it, whether it's data brokers or the government, for doing that. Now, a U.S. senator by the name of Ron Wyden wrote a letter to the Director of National Intelligence, the DNI, named Avril Haines, saying the U.S. government should not be funding and legitimizing a shady industry whose flagrant violation of Americans' privacies are not just unethical, but illegal. I think I would disagree on the illegal part. I want it to be illegal, don't get me wrong. But it's not illegal. And he wanted the director of national intelligence to take steps to, quote unquote, ensure that the U.S. intelligence agency only purchased data on Americans that have been obtained in a lawful manner. Once again, kind of doublespeak, because my shopping history is available for people to buy on the internet. It's something that exists out there, so it's legal. They know everything about how long I look at websites, you know, stuff like that. And honestly, I don't think most Americans, or even people of the world in general, really understand how much data there is about you. There are whole industries. Whole industries that you don't even see. That industries like, and this is why like this whole big like ad blocking and mostly ad blocking. But cookies, Google just recently went after cookies for third-party cookies, saying that, all right, now you have to go through through us. But all this is because the information is not protecting you. They want to be the brokers of that data. They want to sell that data. Now, they'll claim it's anonymized and it's scrubbed, but you could easily Google online news stories upon news stories where they've been able to get information after buying it from data brokers and going exactly to the person who had it. Now, that's just from websites. There are also, these data brokers have software development kits, SDKs, in which they can put into free software that you get from your Apple store or from your Android store. And these don't notify you because the games, they're there. They're just display ads. But they don't notify the users that they're collecting their data and they're selling that data, including location data. Now, I will say the NSA has officially come out and say that they minimize the collection of U.S. person data. They only the most useful data relevant to mission requirements is what they collect. And they do not buy and use location data collected from phones used within the U.S. You know, unless they have a court order. Even in that, there's kind of a gray area. So if my laptop's with me, you're fine buying that location data? Or if I use a tablet and not a phone, is that not another good reason why we can collect data? And honestly, the NSA can tell me whatever they want. I'm not going to necessarily believe them on that. They had that big data center where they were collecting all the information, but they weren't looking at it unless they needed to in their warrant. They could go back and get it. So it's scary that this is what we came to, where even the government spy agencies are turning around to these data brokers as a loop around and some rules. Now, I will say there was also a quote from the DOD, the Department of Defense in the U.S., the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security, Ronald Moultrie. Said that they only acquire and use commercially available data. Once again, great. And it adheres to the highest standards of privacy and civil liberties protection. Once again, when it comes to spying, I don't put it by anyone to use any means necessary to get the information they want. It's not something that I'm going to believe. You couldn't convince me otherwise, because that's the whole idea of intelligence, is to gather it without people knowing about it. So, just something in my viewpoint that just is a little worrisome. But, you know, at least they found a good loophole for it. So for our third story, we go back to our, perennial topic, ransomware attacks. There's a group out there called No Name. They are targeting multiple organizations and industries. They are a Russia attributed group. They are most known for their dynamic denial of service attack, DDoS attacks. They have their own kind of software called DDoSIA, DDoSIA. But recently they've claimed a responsibility for a bunch of cyber attacks that went on. This is totally unverified, but they're making the claim. They said, hey, look, we targeted multiple websites in both in Ukraine, in Finland, and in the United States. And they even listed some of those organizations. Private Bank 24, Credit Argoyle Bank, MTB Bank, Accord Bank, Matek Systems in China, Pixhawk in Switzerland, Spelzentech and Kvitis. And not only did they make these claims, they actually kind of provided links to check out these websites. And some people did report during that time that there were some errors that popped up, like a 503, which is just service unavailable, a 403, which is forbidden, and even some internal server error messages that came up. But it's not necessarily saying that this is tied to these attackers. They could just be normal website problems that pop up from time to time. It's just something that, you know, that is coincidental, but none of the organizations who were under attack have confirmed this. Now, say there's a website called Cyber Express. They did check a bunch of the websites. Most of them were fully operational. They displayed no signs of cyber attack, though they did say that some of the websites they visited did have some issues, as they called it. And, you know, it gets back to the tool belt of the DDoS attack. And we've talked about it as kind of another leg in the ransomware attack that most people do. So, you know, they steal your data, they encrypt your data, and then sometimes they use the third attack to threaten you or to do DDoS or something to put undue pressure on you to conform to their demands. And this group is kind of one of their main tactics, no name, is to DDoS websites. Now, I should say that DDoS websites tend to be really loud and can cripple websites, they don't tend to last very long. You know, it's not something that could be easily kept up. And most organizations nowadays don't host their websites internally. Meaning, if you were to attack jimguckin.com, that wouldn't bring down the rest of the organization. I'm just using that as an example. But, like, you're hitting my web hosting provider. It has no, there's no ties to how things work on the back end. My computer here operates totally fine. And most organizations I've been with are the same way. They host it externally, and some even host it externally with either a DDoS protection website in front of it. So I think the one that most people see nowadays is Cloudflare or Akamai. And these services are just there for that very thing. They kind of take your traffic and they push it onto the web host. They kind of act as a middleman. And when you throw a bunch of traffic at them trying to take the website down, they're able to kind of redirect that traffic automatically. It's not like there's someone usually who's paying attention. They just see a bunch of traffic. It is offloaded. Your customers may experience some downtime if they try to access it at the same time. But the majority of the attack is redirected and not affecting any of your systems, whether they are hosted by you or not. But it's interesting to see a group continue down this path where they're trying to do it. They're taking these claims. Most of this is probably because it's a Russian attributed group, are probably trying to drum up some kind of news story, or they feel the sanctions or the war or whatever you want to tie it down to is unfair, and this is them kind of lashing out. Now, I will say, no name is, you know, from looking into them, they're not necessarily a traditional group. And I'm kind of struggling with the ways to say this. Most groups, you know who they are. There may be some bleeding here and there. These guys are kind of more like lone wolf. Like, you see them all come up all of a sudden. They do what they need to do, and then they kind of blend back away. They're not necessarily engaging with other groups. They're not talking with other groups. They're kind of just on their own thing, which I don't know is a good or bad thing. I mean, I'd rather no group talk to each other because they can't then coordinate. But hey, it's something out there. But I recommend that if you're worried about stuff like this, especially if you're in the financial realm right now, because that seems to be where they're attacking, get yourself some DDoS protection. Make sure your stuff's not hosted on you. Because we did talk about, I want to say late last year, what was it? It was a airport that was hosting their own website. They got hit with a DDoS, it made it hard for them to be able to do some of their job, because all of their job is around getting that customer data and sending customer data out. So they attacked that point. It was dangerous. I want to hope most places they are more separate. But if you rely on customer stuff, like, so if you sell stuff, you work for an e-commerce site, like, having a DDoS protection, yeah, it can be a little inconvenient when someone hits you, because then your customers can't get there. But it's better than having the whole site come down for long periods of time and you having to spend the time to fix it. So for our final story this week, and it was one I learned about through Have I Been Pwned? And this is Trello. It is a project management platform. And it recently was quote-unquote hacked. And I'll say quote-unquote unhacked because from the best information that I've been able to find from the seller, from the organization itself, from people who saw the data trying to be sold, it all looks like data that was easily scraped once you were inside. So there's definitely kind of a partially authenticated attack. But it wasn't like the data, like they had gotten into Trello systems from the best I can tell. But they're still calling it a breach. It's still data exposed that shouldn't have been exposed. Now, Trello has said, look, we have taken steps to prevent any such scraping attacks from our websites, and we're continuing to do good on that, but it happens. So the quote-unquote breach affected 15 million users' personal detail, and it was all scraping its emails and names, and now it's being sold on the dark web. I mean, where else would you really sell it? You can't go in the street corner and sell it. Now, the seller said that they have emails, usernames, full names, and other account information of about 15.1 million unique lines of code records. They published some proof showing that their sample contains entries matching the term Checko, C-H-E-K-O. But even the seller themselves is not claiming that they gained access to the system. They said they used a publicly exposed Trello REST API to collect the data. All they needed was to query it with an email address, and it would return public information on that person that signed up with that email address. So it's not even like they went to Trello and were able to grab stuff they didn't have. They had to take an email list and constantly make a request with that email address. So they needed that information. They were, with the information they had, they queried. A bunch of them probably came back with no information because the user didn't use Trello. But if they did, then it would give them some information back. Like, as I said, the database dump seems to have email, which they had to use it. Usernames, your full name, other account information, like were you a paid member, stuff like that. Nothing that I think was too dangerous. But this is when you expose a API out there, and I'm not an API expert, but this is what can happen. Is someone just takes the time to continue to query it and see what information they get back. Most places you have to buy that kind of access. I don't know about Trello's. I don't know what information was there, and it's great because sometimes, you know, using an API can help you integrate with some of your applications easier, but this is the downside of that. So if you've used Trello, I would recommend going to Have I Been Pwned, seeing if your data was part of the data that was scraped back in January of this year. And I say that because we're kind of at the end of the year at this point. It's only, what, 3 more days left? That's it. And all they did was just enumerate information that they already had. They used previous data breaches to query this data. So there's not much you can do to protect yourself, but this is the dangers of data breaches, because there was another big one that was put out late last week on a combo list. Actually, maybe early last week. A combo list, which is just someone taking all of that data that was already out there and just putting it together and then repackaging it to sell it. And this happens all the time. There are giant lists out there for malicious actors to buy, whether it's a clear text password or a encrypted version of it or hashed version of it, or even your username, email, address, all that information is there, and so people will kind of use it to do evil things. So you know, if you don't see anything right away, doesn't mean that your data wasn't part of a breach. It just means it's out there in someone's list, and it's only a matter of time before someone tries to figure out how to sell it. But these are the dangers of data breaches. You can use one to get another. And a lot of hackers use that technique. They say, hey, I found Jane Doe, username, uses password 1234 exclamation point on Trello, let's just say. Not that passwords are exposed, but I'm going to take that and go to Outlook and go to, you know, maybe I know what bank they use. Do that and continue to use that information across until they find something where that information matches and they get the access. So that's why sometimes you hear these things where, you know, a username and password was taken from a breach because people use the same username and password was able to successfully be used in another breach, which is why you should always use MFA. Always use a second authentication method, whether it texts you. Texting is not the best, don't get me wrong, but it's better than nothing. Rotating token, email, however it works out, they should do it. And I want to say that if you're a developer out there, or if you have a website or a service that people use and you want to charge for that, I think that's the problem. Because you're taking away a key security feature that everyone should be comfortable with and everyone should be using and putting it behind a paywall. I'm not a fan of that kind of thing because this is how it works. You know, your client can't do it. They don't want to pay the extra, but it doesn't care if it's $5 a year. They don't want to pay the $5 a year. They can't afford the $5 a year. And for that, you leave their account vulnerable. That's more on you than it is them. If you make it available to them, they don't use it, then obviously it's on them. But this is why good security hygiene is important, because this is what happens. Every password should be different. And I know that can be annoying, but that stops these attacks from one to the other. People reuse their usernames. They reuse their passwords, but you take a risk for it. And as long as you understand the risk, I mean, I'm not great with it, but it's there. But especially with some of these things like, you know, the 23andMe, Trello, it gives access to not just your data, but a lot of other people's data as well. Thanks so much for joining me and listening to another Cybersecurity News Bite podcast. Don't forget, you can find out more on our website, cybersecuritynewsbite.com. It'll have show notes for the show, including links of where I got this information from, as well as other ways to kind of interact with me. If you want more information, always reach out to me at my website, jimguckin.com. It has all information about me, nothing about the show, but it's all about me. And either way, if you want to talk for anything, I'm always up for a talk. You can go to cybersecurity, or you can email me. me@jimguckin.com, and I'm always happy to talk. So please make sure you stay safe online, and we'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin. Learn more about our show at cybersecuritynewsbite.com.